us. It's always my pleasure to welcome IQ Al-Rasooli to the program on Fridays. IQ is the world's foremost expert on Islam. No one understands the religion better than he does. What he has to say is compassionate, it is moral, it is courageous. And he speaks the truth, which is something we cannot say about the President of the United States, who is engaged in a campaign of lies. Let me just introduce IQ with this statement. President Obama told a summit of representatives from 65 countries that the entire world has a role to play in countering the ideology peddled by terrorist groups. We have to confront the warped ideologies espoused by terrorists like ISIL, Mr. Obama said, using an alternative acronym for the Islamic State. Quote, these terrorists are desperate for legitimately and all of us have a responsibility to refute the notion that groups like ISIL somehow represent Islam, because that is a falsehood that embraces the terrorist narrative, end quote. IQ, I would assume that that makes your blood boil as it does mine.
Well, white heat temperature at the moment. Literally white heat anger.
Yeah, anger.
The duplicity, the mendacity, yeah. The treachery of this mongrel,
yes.
Of a Muslim in the White House.
Yeah.
And this is not racism, what I'm saying.
No.
This is fact.
No, you're an Iraqi.
Exactly.
No, it's a bold-faced lie. It is the antithesis of what's true. And he knows the truth. He is bluntly, deliberately, purposefully lying. And IQ, I don't know of anything he could lie about that has more dire consequences than this.
Absolutely right. This is what, you know what amazes me is this. A third-rate nation, I'm not denigrating them, but compared to the American people, the people of Egypt rose up after 1 year of the Muslim Brotherhood, who was imposing Sharia law upon them. They rose up, 21 million out of 80 million went up in the streets and overthrew them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Americans are raped, murdered, deceived, cheated by this administration and its support for Islam. And nobody does anything. I find that very strange.
Yeah, what I find particularly despicable is that there's no one who is standing up besides, you know, you and I and Ali Sena and a handful of others. But no one in the American media, no one in politics in America, no one in academia in America, no one who has a religious voice in America, not a single person is standing up and saying the president's statements are a bold-faced, absolute, unequivocal lie about the single most deadly issue of our day.
But it's not only a lie. It's treason. I'll tell you why it's treason.
Yeah.
He is subverting the will of the American people by deceiving them, telling them that it's only a handful of so-called radical Muslims. There are no radical Muslims. There are no extremist Muslims. There are no moderate Muslims. And there are no militant Muslims. Just as there was no extremist, militant, moderate, or radical Nazis.
Yeah. In fact, he won't even say that they're radical Muslims. He won't even use radical or extremist Islam. The only way that he'll refer to Islam is wonderful, peaceful, great. This is the time of Islam. He will only refer to Islam in glorious terms, and he will never associate Islamic terrorism with Muslims, ever.
Yaga, he said it in his book. It's in his statement. He said, when the tide turns towards the Muslims, he will be with them. Yeah. He is the one who said that the most beautiful sound
right.
is the call of the Azan, that means the call right. to prayer by Islam.
Correct. Yeah, he's the one that said in the United Nations that the future is not for those who would denigrate Islam's prophet.
Yeah.
No, listen, we're in lockstep that he speaks of Islam as if Islam were a beautiful, wonderful, truthful, beneficial, peaceful ideology.
He's a Muslim.
But he will never speak of radical Islam. He will never speak of Islamic extremism. He will never associate Islam, the religion, with the terror that it perpetrates.
Most Muslims will tell us, and there are so-called moderate Muslims in America and Europe who tell the audience, that the reason that those so-called Muslim radicals are radical is because of imperialism, because of colonialism. Nobody stands up and says, hey, listen, you bastards.
Mm-hmm.
You Arabs came from the Jazeera al-Arabiya, from the Arabian Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
And in the year 635, you started conquering three continents. They were not against you. They didn't even know who you were or whether you existed even. In India, in North Africa, and in Europe.
Yeah.
You conquered, and you never stopped at the gates.
Yeah, and it wasn't like you were conquering like the Romans conquered.
No, they plundered.
It was plundering. They were like a Genghis Khan conquered. They plundered. The only reason that the Crusades occurred is because Islam had been unthwarted in its advance, that it had plundered and mutilated and raped and robbed and murdered its way across three continents.
It was an answer to 350 years of jihad.
Right.
And the reason that Europe doesn't speak Arabic is because of the gates of Vienna is one instance.
Right.
And in the year 732, at the Battle of Poitiers was another instance. Otherwise, Europe, even including England, would be speaking Arabic.
That's true. And they were off cutting off heads in Italy. They were in Greece. They were in Italy. They were about to take all of Europe under this savage criminal enterprise that is Islam. You know, the fact is that the president made his reference to comparison to the Crusades again. And somebody in Congress says, you know, why don't you stay in this millennium? If you're going to cite an example, why don't you stay in this millennium, you idiot? But
yeah,
beyond
but
all of that.
Him an idiot. But he didn't call him an idiot.
I didn't call him an idiot, but he should have called him an idiot.
Of course he should have called him an idiot.
There is.
And why is he comparing the Crusades with
that happened 1,000 years ago. Right, that happened 1,000 years ago, and the Crusades were not an aggressive assault. They were a defensive response. They were a defensive response to 300 years of worldwide plunder, savagery. Streets that would run like rivers of blood where the Muslims had been, with 200 to 300 million people sacrificed.
By the way, if you count the number of Muslims who existed for the last 1,400 years, they are also victims of Islam. Islam
right,
destroyed
course.
The lives of 2,500 million people.
Right. When I wrote Prophet of Doom, I dedicated it to Muslims. And I said, you know, may the truth about Muhammad and Islam set you free.
Yes.
The victims of Islam, the primary victims of Islam, aren't the Christians and atheists that they kill, that they plunder, that they rape. The vast majority of those victimized by Islam are Muslims.
Correct. Look at them today as we watch.
Right.
More Muslims are getting killed every single day by other Muslims, not by Christians,
right. Yeah.
Not by Hindus, not by
the
Jews.
The 200 million little girls that have their genitals mutilated, is it by Christians?
No.
Oh.
By Muslims.
And
750 million women in Islam are treated like domestic animals. By whom? Christians, Jews, Buddhists, Hindus? No, Muslims.
When in Egypt, 97% of Egyptian women say that they have been sexually assaulted multiple times in their lives. Who's sexually assaulting them?
Their family.
Yeah, their own family, Muslims.
You know, nobody says anything in America.
No.
Nobody says anything in Europe.
The thing that bothers me the most is the truth is so obvious. It's so available. And yet we have a culture in our media, a culture in academia, a culture in our society, a culture in politics, that no one is willing to do the modicum of work that is necessary to know the truth. And those few that know the truth, the vast majority, don't have the courage to state it. And everything about Obama's statements are a bold-faced lie. I mean, Muhammad, he is the sole example of what it means to be a Muslim, correct?
Absolutely. He's the most perfect human being that ever existed according to Islam.
Right. And was Muhammad a terrorist?
Shall I continue? Terrorist, mass murderer, plunderer, child rapist, the head of the first organized crime syndicate in human history. Islam is an organized crime syndicate, whether it was 1,400 years ago or it is today.
When you understand Islam as a criminal enterprise, you understand Islam. There's nothing more to Islam than a criminal enterprise. That's what it is. But Muhammad said, I have become victorious with terror.
Yes.
His first act during the first year of the Islamic era was to terrorize and rob and murder and enslave his former neighbors, merchants.
Correct. His own tribe. By the way, his own tribe.
And in the next 10 years, over the course of 10 years, he led or inspired 75 terrorist raids, all with the primary purpose of plunder and rape and enslavement.
By the way, dear listeners, what Yada is saying when he says terrorist raids, what he's getting at is these were raids of ambush.
Yes.
Ghazwa in Arabic is an ambush. People who never suspected that they would be plundered. They didn't suspect they would be murdered, to be enslaved and to be raped. He always attacked civilians who are unarmed. Muslims always attack civilians who are not armed. You watch them on television 24 hours a day since 9/11. What was 9/11? A military target?
No.
What was 7/7 in England? What was Belstani in Russia? All civilians, unarmed.
100% of the time. That is their, not 100% of the time, but it's the overwhelming preponderance of the time. They use the same tactic that Muhammad did. IQ, when we return, we have Jason, who is calling in from Toronto, and I know he has a statement he'd like to make about Obama and Islam. Mr. Obama said, while there's a complicated history between the Middle East and the West, this is not a clash of civilizations. The notion that the West is at war with Islam is an ugly lie. Jason, what do you think about the Obama's campaign tactic now, his stump speech, that there's no correlation between Islam and Islamic terrorism?
It's a clash between the President of the United States and facts.
Yeah, and facts. The truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got the President of the United States and bold-faced lies about the single most important issue of our day.
Why, a couple questions I got.
Sure.
Why would we care what Obama thinks Islam is? And secondly, why do we have a moral obligation to defend its reputation?
Yeah, those are two good questions. IQ, do you think we should care about what Obama has to say about Islam? And number two, why do you think that he is so fixated on defending Islam's reputation?
First of all, yes, we have to listen to Obama, not to listen to him, but to demonstrate that he is not a stupid man.
Yeah.
That he's a traitor in the White House.
Right.
Yes, we should listen to him. That doesn't mean we follow what he's talking about. That doesn't mean we should believe what he's saying. No.
Yeah.
He's a pathological liar.
It's important to expose. It's important to expose destructive and deadly lies.
Absolutely.
This is an extraordinarily destructive and deadly lie that he is promoting. And if you care about other individuals if you care about anybody, if you care about humanity, it is incumbent upon us to expose and condemn the deadly and merciless lies that are promoted by those who are empowered. Now, the second part, why do you think he is trying to give, trying to rehab the image of Islam?
Because he's a Muslim. I mean, it is so blatant. I mean, you know as well as I do that before he was elected, we knew he was a Muslim. By the way, he didn't hide anything. All he said that he's a Christian. Mm-hmm. He never said he left Islam. Not once.
Right. Right. And from
you can't be a Christian without having left Islam.
You see, there's actually this really twisted perspective in Islam where Islam seeks all of its credibility by pretending to be the religion that was promoted by Adam and Noah and David Dode, by Abraham, by all the way through Yahusha. So it claims to be that they were all Islamic prophets. So in the twisted view of a Muslim, you can go to a place that speaks about Yahusha, in the case of Jesus misnomer Jesus, and be somehow still a Muslim, because in the Quran they're all recast as Muslim prophets. And I think that's his personal twist on this whole thing. Of course, that all that does is prove that Islam is a lie, because their testimony is the antithesis of Muhammad's Quranic testimony.
But we know that the Allah, the God of Islam, is most definitely, most assuredly, not the same as the God of the Bible, not the same as the God of Jesus, Moses, and Abraham. Can we prove it? Of course we can prove it.
Right.
We can prove it in less than 60 seconds.
Correct.
In 20 different ways in less than 60 seconds.
Yeah.
In
the Torah, prophets, and Psalms,
right?
In the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, Yahweh provides his name exactly 7,000 times. And he says, that is my one and only name. Any god by any other name is a false god. And the Muhammad construct of God, he has actually three names for his God. It starts with the Lord, then it migrates to Ar-Rahman, and then it ultimately, by the time he leaves Mecca and following the satanic verses and flees to Yathrib, today's Medina, it becomes Allah, who was just one of 360 rock gods in the rock pile known as the Kaaba. And Allah is most assuredly Muhammad.
100% Muhammad. Because nobody revealed anything to him. It is impossible. It is inconceivable for anyone reading the Quran, which has absolutely no beginning, no middle, and no end in any chapter, and no beginning and no middle and no end in the whole of the Quran, to believe that a God could have emanated these thoughts.
Oh, it's a jumbled mess. It's not ordered chronologically. It's not ordered contextually. It is plagiarized. It is bastardized. It is twisted. It is wrong historically. It is wrong scientifically. It has no prophecy to prove its legitimacy, and it is morally reprehensible. Mr. Obama offered a to-do list for nations around the world to counter ISIS recruiting techniques. By the way, it's not ISIS, it's not ISIL, it's the Islamic State. Especially those aimed at young Muslims around the globe. Countries must break the cycles of violence, especially sectarian conflict, which have become magnets for violent extremism. He talked about the importance of confronting the economic troubles, noting that terrorist recruitment is especially effective in communities where young people feel trapped and no path for education, attainment, or employment to support a family. Let's deal with the second part of that first, IQ. Apart from those countries that are personal fiefdoms and float on a sea of oil and gas, and have been enriched by the West as a result of floating on a sea of oil and gas. Is there any Islamic country that is prosperous economically?
But Yada, he has completely and utterly ignored, as usual, The fact that many of those who are going to ISIS, ISIL, whatever crap he wants to call them,
yeah, they're the Islamic State.
They are educated. They are educated in the West. They are
right.
not disfranchised. And
correct.
Also he ignores there are hundreds of millions of poor people in Latin America, in Africa, and in Asia, but they don't go out and murder people. Only Muslims do that.
The fact of the matter is that the first point is Islam is responsible for the poverty that Islam inflicts.
Of course,
that's why
100%.
Muslims are the first victims of Islam. And Islam inflicts poverty because Muhammad never worked. Muhammad hated work. So the only mission of a Muslim was to be a jihadist and was to plunder others who did work. So Muslims became ruthless parasites. And as a ruthless parasite, you cannot build any economic prosperity. So Islam is forever going to be a failed enterprise. You can't invest in an Islamic country and get a beneficial result. It's impossible. So let's put that aside. Now, the second is that you're right. That the Muslims who are engaged with ISIS are the wealthiest, best educated Muslims.
Correct.
They're the Muslims that are on the internet, learning about what they're doing over there. They're the ones with means to buy tickets and to fly there. They're the ones with the means to buy their own weapons so that they can engage in the great jihad. They're the most devoted Muslims.
The 19 who attacked the Twin Towers.
Yes.
Were educated, well off. Not
yes.
one of them was starving. Not one of them was a
correct.
Very humble family. Not one.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, this whole idea that the West needs to invest in the world of Islam, exactly the opposite is the solution. We need to divest ourselves of Islam. We need to quarantine Islam and stop doing business with Muslim nations.
Of course. This is the only logical answer to all the problems we have. By the way, for those who are listening, 1.5 billion people in 57 Muslim-majority states are the least productive, least inventive, least creative in human history.
Cool.
I'm sure there are a lot of people listening.
Right.
I wish some of them would call in. If you disagree, call. If you agree, call. But we would like to hear from you, not just one single caller somewhere from America. Call in. We're not going to kill you.
If you want to attempt to defend Islam, have at it. But, you know, be prepared to have what you say held up to evidence and reason. You know, the fact is that Islam cannot be defended. You know, the fact is that the very core of what the president said is wrong from both perspectives. One is there is no such thing as a peaceful Muslim. And that's not our opinion. The reason there's no such thing as a peaceful Muslim is the Quran is the lone arbitrator of what is a Muslim. And the Quran in the ninth surah says that you cannot be a peaceful Muslim. And it's full stop. It says that if you are not a jihadist as a Muslim, you cease to be a Muslim, you become a hypocrite, and that good jihadist Muslims are ordered to kill you so that Allah can torture you in hell. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct. By the way, if I may just interrupt a second.
Right.
I had a talk on Thursday
with
a Pakistani-American, Pakistani origin, a doctor, a medical doctor, but he said he has turned into a born-again Muslim, and he wrote a book, and...
Born-again Muslim, that's funny.
...published. By the way, I mean, he wrote a book, it's called The Quran, Will or Against the Bible, and I had a chat with him for an hour. He was in complete denial. The moderator asked him, because I showed him the verses from the Quran which were militant.
Right.
So he asked him, okay, could you show us in the Quran verses which were nice? He said, yes.
Peaceful.
Yes. So what did he do, which every Muslim does? Al-Ma'idah, chapter 5, verse 32. He quoted this. He said, the Quran says, if anyone slew a person unless it be for murder or spreading mischief in the land, it would be as if he slew the whole world. And if anyone saved a life, it would be as if he saved the whole life of the people.
Uh-huh.
But he didn't add, because he subtracted, the meaning of the verse, whereby the verse says actually, we, Allah, ordained upon the children of Israel this verse. Nothing to do with Islam, nothing to do with Muhammad, and nothing to do with the Arabs.
That's correct. And also, the verse was plagiarized.
It's a direct
quote from the Talmud, and it's speaking in the Talmud about Cain and Abel. And so Muhammad plagiarized it directly from the Talmud, and he's one of the few that he actually attributed it to the Talmud. and it does not apply to Islam. And since you probably have a Quran handy, why don't you read the next verse?
The next
Quran 533. What follows it?
Okay. But the 533 is the one which goes to slaughter people.
Oh, yeah. Decapitate, slaughter, cut off an arm and a leg on opposite sides, crucify them, slaughter them, imprison them. Yeah.
I mean, it comes from one good verse to the next violent verse.
Yeah, that's how pathetic Islam is. And by the way, George Bush and Obama have both quoted, out of context, 532 to create the impression that Islam is peaceful when the verse comes, it's plagiarized from the Talmud. It comes, it applies in the Quran only to Jews, not to Muslims. And number three, it's followed by the most vicious statement ever attributed to God. 533.
The punishment of those who wage war against Allah and His Messenger. Always, Allah and His Messenger are twinned together. Because Allah and Messenger are one the same.
Right,
and
that's why it's always we.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And strive with might and main for mischief through the land. Is execution or crucifixion or the cutting off of hands and feet from opposite sides.
Mutilation.
So what happened to the, if you what happened to that one?
It is pathetic. So first of all, the Quran says there is no such thing as a peaceful Muslim, and it goes so far in the ninth surah to explain that a non-jihadist, non-warring, non-terrorist Muslim ceases to be a Muslim, becomes a hypocrite, must be killed as an apostate by good Muslims so that Allah can torture that person in hell. And by the way, Allah will torture them in hell, because guess where Muhammad is?
In hell.
That's right. Now, so they got that part right.
The verse that you were alluding to, again in chapter 5, Al-Ma'idah 5.51, says, O ye who believe, Muslims, take not the Jews, Yahud, and the Christians, Nasara, for your friends and protectors. They are but friends and protectors to each other. And he amongst you Muslims that turns to them for friendship is of them.
Right.
Means they are apostates.
Right.
I mean, and, it is clear.
Right. And what does the Quran say in the ninth surah and the fifth surah must be done to the Christians and Jews? Because the fifth surah was written because the Muhammad had overhunted Jews. There were no more Jews to plunder. He'd overhunted Jews. He'd robbed every Arab within camel ride of Medina. And he needed new prey. And the only place to go was the Byzantine outposts. And he couldn't get his jihadists to go against the Byzantines because they actually had an army.
Exactly.
And so the ninth surah and the fifth surah redefined the enemy of Islam from Jews to Christians because of the fact, or it added Christians certainly to the list, and they're the mischief makers in the land. That's what the fifth surah is all about. The ninth surah is all about, if you're not a jihadist Muslim, you're not a Muslim. So there is no such thing as a peaceful Muslim, a moderate Muslim. It's a complete myth.
It's impossible.
Right. But the second part of it
can ever be loyal to the American Constitution, because the American Constitution is man-made and not from Allah.
Right.
Nor can any Muslim be loyal citizen to him in America, because Muslim Americans who are not Muslim, non-Muslim Americans, which are 97% of the population, are infidels, kuffar, unbelievers, kafirun.
I would
like to add something.
99%.
When Yada and I are talking about Christians in Arabia or Jews in Arabia, they were not bloody foreigners.
No.
These were Arabs who converted to the religion of the Jews or to the religion of Christianity without anybody putting a stop.
And throughout
the religion of the Jews or the religion of Christians?
And throughout the 1,400-year history of Islam, how have the Zoroastrians, the Jews, and the Christians fared in Islamic-dominated societies?
When they wanted them killed, they killed them, but they were always under Sharia law in degradation and humiliation all the time.
Right, yes. So they were either killed for sport, raped for sport, or they were robbed to keep
also
their...
For sport.
Now, the second part of this where the president is disassociating Islam from terrorism, is there anything that is vital to Islam that occurred during the first 10 years of the Islamic era that wasn't part and parcel of a terrorist raid?
Never. The whole of the period, in the last period of his life, 10 years, every single one of them was jihad.
Yeah. There was nothing. And all of the jihad, without exception, was against defenseless civilians. It was all textbook terrorism. There isn't a single act chronicled by Muhammad in the Quran or Hadith that wasn't terror-oriented. To say that Islam is peaceful is wholly inconsistent with Muhammad, with the Quran, with the Hadith, with the Sunnah, with Sharia, with Muhammad's first 10 years and during the Islamic era, with 100 years that followed his death, and with all of the experience that we have witnessed henceforth. And yet the President of the United States says it, condemns any other view, and there isn't a single journalist in the world who is willing to hold him accountable.
Yeah. All they needed to know are two verses, and I'm going to recite them to you. Chapter 47, Muhammad, verse 4. Therefore, when you Muslims meet the unbelievers, infidels, kuffar, chop off their heads. And if Obama said, da-da-da-da, that would have continued. Stop it, Mr. Obama. Al-Anfal 8.55 says, for the worst of beasts in the sight of Allah are those who reject him. They will not believe. La yu'minun means people who are not Muslims. End of conversation.
Yeah. And what does the 8th surah say? It says that you're free to rob them, and stealing from them is lawful and good. You can kidnap them. You can enslave them. You can commit acts of mass murder against them. You can lay in wait against them. You can terrorize them. And Allah will be right there with you when you perpetrate all of these heinous behaviors.
I wonder what he would have answered. I would have finished him off, honestly.
Oh, of course. It's not just that a politician lies. They all lie.
Yes.
It's just that his lie is the antithesis of the truth, bold-faced and blunt, and repetitive on the single most deadly issue of our day.
This is why he's a pathological liar. He's a Muslim.
Yeah.
You know that, and I know that. Yeah. Because Muhammad was a narcissist, a pathological narcissist, and pathological narcissists are pathological liars. They can't help it.
Yeah.
He always looks at himself. You can see how he puts his head up.
Oh, I know.
That he is God.
Oh, yeah. He's, in fact, Time magazine actually pronounced him God inaugurated in his first term. It's as if he were God. And he presents himself as a God-like figure. And so he is actually thinks that he has the right to define Islam as he wants it defined because, well, he's God.
Hitler was the same, by the way.
Of course.
And Muhammad was the same.
Yes.
And Stalin was the same.
So
and Pol Pot was the same.
Yes.
They're all the same.
And so was Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, as was Muhammad.
Exactly.
All of these men that would claim power for themselves, so was Hadrian. So was Julius Caesar. So was Augustus. Vespasian. Hadrian. All the same.
They're all ordained by their God to do whatever they want.
And their God is themselves. Every one of them. You know, when Hitler wrote Mein Kampf, he became his own God. Muhammad and his God were one. Paul and his God were one. Paul is the God of Christianity.
Correct. Nothing in Christianity which is from Jesus, by the way.
No, nothing. Yeah, nothing. Yeah, in fact, even Thomas Jefferson figured it out. He says that Paul was first, the first to corrupt the testimony and mission of Yahusha.
100%.
Yeah.
Corrupted. Completely corrupted.
Yeah, completely corrupted. I wrote you the other day, we were talking about how the chosen people, the Israelites, have defied all odds. It's a singularity in all of human history. And I said, well, the singularity in all of human history is the promises made to them by the one and only creator God of the universe, Yahweh. And I told you, they said there are no contradictions in the whole of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Now, if you had said, but if you look at the Christian New Testament, particularly Paul, it's nothing but contradictions. And I would have said, you're right.
Yes.
You're right.
Unfortunately, we are both right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the fact of the matter is that men have perceived themselves as God. And we were, in the earlier hour in this program, we've been dissecting the third chapter of Yahuchanan, of John 3, because John 3:16 is the verse that Christians always cite out of context. And one of the things that Yahusha said in this context was, I never trust the testimony of men. I know the nature of men. And therefore, I will never rely on men to provide my testimony. Yeah, he created them. He should know. He says, I will never trust the testimony of men.
Have a good day, sir.
I love your insights, IQ. You are the most remarkable man I think I have ever had the pleasure of getting to know.
God bless you.
God bless you.